It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome in to the Scotty Johnny podcast. I'm your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Cheddar Talk Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? My computer is really being a jerk tonight. I don't know what's going on here. This is great. Good start.
Yeah, 2020 strikes so many times. Bad things are only supposed to come in threes. That's how I've always experienced it. This isn't fair. We're just way beyond our threes. It's just not right. I'd like to remind all of our followers across the United States and throughout the world, Germany, India, Australia, Austria as well, Canada, Northwest Territories of Canada especially. We love you people.
Yeah, Dawson.
Yes.
Nice to see you.
We love
India now too, right? Wasn't that the other one?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. India is one of the ones we've had a couple times. And yeah, it's fun to see the amount of people from across the world getting involved in Packers talk here. But one thing we'd like to say is wherever it is that you are listening to us, first off, thank you. And secondly, remember that wherever it is that you download us, to remember that you need to subscribe. If you could please download, listen, rate, and review us. The last two are the most important. And please give us the 5-star ratings so we can help getting more people to the show. And seeing more and more of us. Also, I'll tell you, we do exist on Twitter. And you can follow this show at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Not So Humble Host. And Aaron, how do people find you on Twitter if they were so inclined as to look for you?
So I'm laughing right now, actually. You can find me at Cheddar Talk, John, at Cheddar Talk. And the Packer Ranter, at Packer Ranter, had working to confirm a few things for the Bob Tonyan story. Once he saved a small town from a gang of cattle ranchers. Two, he once rescued a group of miners trapped in a collapsed shaft. And three, he once walked across an Australian outback with nothing but a copy of The Hobbit. And then White Moon Dave, with the snarky reply, Bob Tonyan has a green ox named Gabe.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is.
Green ox named Gabe.
Green ox named Gabe.
That's pretty fantastic. I love that. That's a good comeback.
And where everyone can argue whether or not where Paul Bunyan actually came from, because there's claims from Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, too, I think, has a claim on Paul Bunyan as well, where I came from.
I thought he was from Maine. And
yeah, from Maine
west.
Maine too. Yeah, there's that one. There's also another one that he came from Montana and Canada too. Like, there's all sorts of stories as to where he came from. It's kind of like the John Henry bit, but there's only one thing for sure. Bob Tonyan came from Indiana State,
Sycamore,
and he's got a. Hey, wasn't Larry Bird a Sycamore?
He was.
Yes. Yeah, there's the win.
We now know two. Anyway. Well, I know three people who went to Indiana State. I went to law school with another guy.
Oh, I was going to say
he was from Brazil and
Brazil.
Could not. He hated the heat. It made him feel sick, and so he was very happy to be in Wisconsin. It's amazing to see. He doesn't play soccer.
It's funny. The guys in my unit that are from Nigeria or not Nigeria. Sorry, the
all
Gambia.
The Nigerians.
The Gambia or Gambia.
Ugh, Gambia,
the Gambian Delta, all talk about how dry it is in Wisconsin in the summertime. And I'm like, what?
Fabulous. It's nice to visit other places and you get that stuff there. Yeah, all right. The one little other kind of selfless or, you know, self-full, I guess, prideful, shameless is what I was looking for, self-promotion. You'll see if you follow me on Twitter, I tweeted out my tally site rankings this week. I ranked number 5 overall in overall picks and number 2 against the spread among all the sports writers on the site. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Not bad.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah. I have the worst fantasy football team of all time.
Nah, I have just the worst luck, at least in our league. And everybody cares about our fantasy league, Aaron. They do.
Yeah, they do.
Anyhow, we'll get everything kicked off right away with what we like to call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron. So we've got another Packer victory.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, 4-0 feels great again. Just it's a what is it now? Is it it's 17-3 for Matt LaFleur since he came over to be the head coach. He is 17-3. It's one of the best starts in the history of any, I guess, coach in their first.
Seifert, who took over for Walsh, has him by one game, and he's tied with Paul Brown, who was one of the innovators back in the day. And
if you
also
can be at
too,
any list where those are the names, it's fantastic.
No, it's great. And the other screen that you don't see thrown up on TV because it would just be mean is that since he's taken over for Mike McCarthy as the coach of the Packers, him and Mike McCarthy both have the same amount of losses. Did you see that?
McCarthy's one win is against that Falcons team because the Falcons gave it away.
Yes,
that's sad to see.
And the Browns smoked them.
Yes, hard. It was never close. That was a bad one. And the thing you do now is you say, like, look, and what's fair is Mike McCarthy has a very talented team there. He has a lot of talent. He has an incredibly good receiving core. I would trade straight up our wide receivers for theirs. I mean, if they would agree, I would agree.
Yeah, I would too. No, I love Devontae. I love Allen Lazard. They have a great receiving core.
Yeah, Amari and CeeDee Lamb and Gallup. And you're just like, wow. And Dak has looked very good. I mean, he's throwing all the time because he has to.
He's throwing 500 yards a game. Like, he'd be an MVP candidate if they were winning.
If they were winning, he wouldn't throw that many yards. That's the other thing. But here, the thing is like, you just look at like what McCarthy does there. You're not finding ways of getting people open in the system. He's not scheming to get people open in the way that LaFleur is able to scheme people open. Like, you just see the number of people we talked about at the beginning of the show here, or at least pre-show, the number of ways that they were able to get just people running free in green space. And I'll grant you, the defense for Atlanta is not the defense for the Browns. It's not.
No.
It's one of the worst defenses we'll see in quite a while here.
Well, going into the weekend, they were 1-2 for worst defenses with the Cowboys. So
yeah, that's the thing is, he doesn't have a defense. McCarthy doesn't have a defense, and that's fair to point out for him is that that's not his fault. His team just doesn't
have that. He should know how to play without a defense. He did it for 13 years in Green Bay.
Yeah, so it's going to be...
Except for the Super Bowl year.
Yeah, that's going to be the hard part for him there. But you look at what, without adding an insane amount of talent to this Packers team, how quickly it was able to be turned around. I mean, they've added Lazard. But in the meantime, we've seen a couple of players have to leave and go elsewhere and stuff too.
I mean, Lazard and Tanyan are both undrafted free agents. That's not even an ad. That's an afterthought that just, I mean,
yeah,
that they developed into good talent. I mean,
yeah, it's just, it's understanding
like,
what you're
like
looking
Goodart
for.
Knows what he's doing.
Generally speaking, he does. The other thing too, is that LaFleur, and this is how they phrased it on the show. And, the people on the TV broadcast actually phrased it this way. In talking about him, that the way that they talk about him is that he is selfless and he doesn't have the ego. The ego is the part they're saying, like, he doesn't come into the game. Like this is my biggest gripe with McCarthy the entire time. As we've talked about on this show several times, Mike McCarthy loves his system. His system will win you games. His system is the thing that's going to make everybody successful. And
McCarthy
loves
him some McCarthyism.
Right. He likes his system. To the extent that he will continue doing it even when it's not working. And that is the first big thing. If you have the audacity to believe that you should be an NFL head coach, you have the sort of audacity to believe that you are the smartest person you have ever met and that the things you've thought of in your brain are the greatest football thoughts ever, maybe, especially once you've won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the things that makes Belichick so great is he doesn't put system over evaluating his talent and putting them in positions to make plays. And that's what LaFleur's offense is doing. He had, he's in there. Lazard goes to the injured reserve. He has to miss three games. Kirksey also sent to the injured reserve, has to miss three games, Remember, it's not 3 weeks. It is three games.
Games, yep.
So the bye week doesn't count in that counting period. He has to miss two more games after that. So this Lazard...
This ain't baseball, kids.
Yeah. So Lazard is out. Devontae is out. And that's another thing we can talk about in a second here. But and what do they do? They said, well, we'll have MVS and Shepard and Begelton. Begelton only played like three or four snaps. And Malik Taylor. And it was just, they said, well, then let's get 90 yards and three touchdowns for Tanyan. How about we get 90 yards for Williams receiving? And we'll line up. Sometimes we'll have three running backs on the field. I mean, they had Swervin Irvin, they had Swag Daddy, and they had Aaron Jones all on the field at the same time, because you can put two of them out wide. It doesn't matter which two, and put the other one in the backfield to make them think.
I'm just waiting for the formation where we see AJ Dillon and Swag Daddy in the backfield and Aaron Jones and Irvin split out with four wide receivers or four running backs on the field at once. It's coming. You know it's coming.
Well, if someone else gets hurt, yeah.
I mean, Irvin's, I mean, I know he's a running back by trade, but he returns kicks and he's good in space. It's like he's a wide receiver with the number 32. He's a nice little, he's that X factor little wide receiver running back guy that every team needs, like when you're trying to do all this crazy stuff. And all this Jets sweep action. Did you see that Kansas City play where they had three Jets in one play on the touchdown to Tyreek Hill when he ran it in? It was ridiculous. Like And LaFleur is the same way. I mean, he's obviously putting in that offense that it's hard to account for everybody moving around all the time. I mean, we saw last night the difference between Jones and Williams, though. While they look the same in every way, shape, or form, and they're kind of the same size, Williams is missing something that Jones has. That it's not quite the same, but they're dang near the same coming out of the backfield.
They're very similar. Yeah.
Go ahead. It's like if you were to give Williams the explosiveness that Irvin has, it's almost like if you put Irvin and Williams together, you get Jones.
That's a good way of phrasing it. The biggest thing they approach running differently, essentially, is how I would say it. Williams is far more likely to want to seek to initiate contact. Mm-hmm. I would say you prefer him in the short yardage, but I mean, I'm not saying that Aaron Jones is bad in short yardage. He's been very good around the goal line. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is Aaron Jones, his balance is so great. You saw it this week. The one, he comes up the middle, he gets hit by a guy who pulls a total packer, who doesn't wrap up, just figures he's like, I'll hit him and he'll go down. And then, Jones just bounced, stopped, and then said, I guess I'll run to the right here. And he cut to the right and got to the first down. Mm-hmm. And that's his biggest thing. His balance is phenomenal and is really great to see. They both have great, great hands. I mean, both of them had really nice catches on balls on the sideline that were beautifully thrown, just beautifully thrown balls, exactly what you wanted Aaron Rodgers to be doing. He missed like one or two. This is absolutely nitpicking. Shepard, who wasn't open, and he just missed him a little bit, kind of short on that. But I mean, Shepard's just a guy. I mean, he is just a guy. Nothing special.
He showed it on what should have been his first NFL touchdown catch. When if he would have just rolled, he would have been in the end zone. Like you said, he put his foot down. Right there at the goal line. Yeah, that's whatever. All he would have had to do was just turn. But, he would have just had to log roll 180 degrees and he would have had a touchdown, but instead he dove sideways. But, Aaron Rodgers at a certain point last night, you just got this feeling once the game was in hand, was just toying.
That's really exactly the right word.
I mean, people forget this is what Aaron Rodgers was back when in the MVP years. Like, before McCarthy went to pot and was just you know, running the same stuff over and over and over again. And they're always playing from behind. And Aaron Rodgers is literally just, and it's apropos they did it against Atlanta, because it was in the run to the Super Bowl when they met Atlanta in the divisional round. Atlanta was the number one seed. Aaron Rodgers went into the old Georgia Dome and just shredded Atlanta on the way to the Super Bowl. And everyone was like, oh, hello, what's going on here? Like, who's this guy? You know, and last night you could kind of see, like, he was kind of testing out, like, how are these guys going to? I mean, there was some play, there was plays that these guys were so wide open, it was stupid. Like, Aaron Jones on the on his touchdown catch was, they didn't cover him.
They double covered, I believe it was Tanyan on the outside there, and he was in a slot just outside the tackle. And they just did a little cross where he just kind of, you know, like things. Tanyan came in and did a short in, and then just this Jones just kind of, you know, a couple steps forward and just rolled out to the side there. And
it wasn't even a pick rub. It's not like Tanyan took somebody out.
No, they both picked him.
Both followed. And then they decided that, hey, we're going to double cover Jones for the rest of the game and just let Tanyan run around and catch the ball.
It seemed to me on that
let's never double cover Tanyan ever again, is what Atlanta said at that point.
Right. Yes. Or cover him.
At all.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that touchdown, it looked like one guy thought they had man and the other guy thought they had zone. So the one guy's like, I got this area. And the other guy's like, I got that dude. And he came in and nobody went outside to take the flat away. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, they both took the hook and nobody took the flat. So yeah, it was a weird way of setting that up. But yeah, the other one that was great for Tanyan is they literally tackled him just on the way. And then he somersaults, gets up, and he's like, I'm open by like 10 yards, guys. And the guy who was covering me is still on the ground. And it was just the most ridiculous. Like, how is he that open?
That was the top 10. Like, that's right up there with the improbable bobble. Dorsey Levin's catching the ball over top the guy on the, remember the old, when Dorsey Levin's did the fly route down the right side against Philadelphia, and he like caught it, like, and he was like over top the guy and like one handed it, and the D back was underneath him and he caught it like that. I'll always remember that one. Dorsey Levin's does not get.
There's also the one Dorsey had in the NFC title game against the Panthers. Right. That was a great, great catch.
Right. And then Jace, Swag Daddy, last year against Kansas City, when Aaron Rodgers threw that ball, that crazy ball to the back corner of the end zone.
That was
Williams deserves as much credit for catching that as Aaron Rodgers does for just hucking it to that back corner. So yeah, we could go through all
tracking
this
that ball. Yeah. And of course, Antonio Freeman's catch against the Vikings.
Right. And then, of course, Max McGee catching it on the point of the ball on the way to the end zone when he was hung over in the Super Bowl. That's the best.
Oregon says that he wasn't actually hungover. The guy who shared the room with McGee said, he's like, no, I was there. We were told not to go out. I made sure he didn't go anywhere.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought
it's a better story, though. Right?
I thought they said that he broke curfew that night.
He has said that. He said that story several times, obviously. He loved that story.
Max McGee was a great storyteller. Max McGee was Bob Uecker before Bob Uecker was Bob Uecker. Oh, so yeah.
It was so good.
I mean, people under the age of, I mean, we had Jim Irwin and Max McGee for the first Super Bowl, right?
For the first Super Bowl? Oh, for the
of our era.
31. Super Bowl 31. Yeah. Yes, they were both there for that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, here's the things that we've kind of learned here in this game. The depth at wide receiver is not great, and we overcame it. The Packers overcame it. But the guys we saw, like, you expected MVS was going to have a better day today. You expected, you know, yesterday. And you didn't get anything from him. There was one where he had, seriously, it was a great back shoulder throw by Rodgers to get to MVS. And it's the one that Devontae catches basically every time because it kind of requires that stop. It's Jordy made it just every time.
Yeah.
Where you slight stop. Yeah, get your shoulders back and around and get your hands up to the ball. He went back to the ball with just one hand and just did not use his body correctly to get himself in a position to get two hands to that ball.
He left his hand on the wide. He got caught on the D-back on the way around, too, and he didn't, like, let go of him for whatever reason. Yeah.
It's the little
Greg, things. And Greg Jennings before Jordy Nelson.
Yeah. But Jordy was just so much. He was better at it than Jennings was, though.
Jennings, but it started with Jennings. Jordy perfected it, and I was super peed off at MVS. I was like, dude, what was that? Like, his other hand was, it wasn't like it was caught. Like, at first I was like, oh shoot, his hand got caught on the body of the D-back as he was. No, he was like pushing on the D-back.
It was like a safety blanket. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like he needed to know kind of where everything was while going up. That's the biggest thing that gets me at this point with MVS is he has done very well in getting to understand where he's supposed to go, how the play works, and the timing for the most part. But he's not tightening up the way he runs his routes and the little things about getting your body to the ball while it's in the air. He's not getting to that. It reminds me, I guess, a little bit of like Javon Walker. Javon Walker had to get to that point where he had that switch, and it was around the time of the Brett Favre game against the Raiders, where he had that switch in his head of understanding when the ball is in the air, that's mine. And that, first off, is a mentality thing, but it is an idea of making sure you understand how to high point the ball, that you understand how to get your body in the air to those places, and that you understand how to move yourself around the defensive back or use your eyes. Greg Jennings used to have the great one. What he would do is he called it the dead arm catch. He'd be running down the field and he wouldn't even put his hands up, because the moment you put your hands up to get ready for the ball, that's when the D-back turns around to swat it. So he would just wait and then just flip his hands out and catch it low, because that way the defensive back wouldn't get there. And that was brilliant, because he had a great understanding of his own body and how to move himself to the ball effectively. I mean, he has lots of problems. Most of them involve him speaking out loud, but his play on the field was incredibly good. And
for about 3 years, he was potentially the best wide receiver in football, and that's saying something right there, because he was playing up against some good ones at that time. But
yeah, MVS needs to get those things down. He needs to get those things, and he's not doing it yet.
And you brought up Javon too, and I always forget this one too. And he was potentially the second most athletically gifted wide receiver the Packers ever had. Number one is Sterling Sharpe, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise. Sterling Sharpe should be in the Hall of Fame, but his career was cut way too. Even Shannon Sharpe says that. Like, not even the most, he's not even the most gifted athlete in his household growing up. But it's just like, we have short-term memory, and it's the last, we everything we do is in the last 40 years. James Lofton was on the team too, absolutely gifted. We'd have to say definitely Adams is gifted. Greg Jennings for about a 2-year period there playing with Aaron Rodgers was ridiculous though. Javon, he would have been, if he would have had his head straight, I don't know if it was because he was there during the time when the Packers were in transition and whatnot that he didn't pan out, but that dude was seriously talented. And it just didn't work.
Especially hurt him is he went to Denver and actually watched a teammate shot and killed in front of him. And that,
I completely forgot about that too.
Seemed to have derailed his entire career at that point. Beyond MVS, who ended with something like 40 yards in here, dude, in the hard cut there away from the murders. Beyond MVS, we didn't see basically anything from the wide receiving corps in this game. It was just they were absent. Like, Tonyan had 98, Williams had 95, 45 yards from MVS, caught 4 of 8 targets. Some of them were not great, but he should have had a couple more. Jones caught 5 of 5. Shepard caught 2 of 3 for 21 yards. Malik Taylor had 1 for 20, and then Irvin had 1.
Shepard should have had 2 for 24 if he would have known a log roll.
We didn't get 90 total. Like, all the receivers did not combine to get what Jamal Williams had.
Only Aaron Rodgers could come up with a tidy game that has so few yards but still has 4 passing touchdowns, and legitimate passing touchdowns, not like shovel touchdowns either.
I mean, you count them all, but that's fine.
I'm just saying, like, none of them were cheap. They were all legit downfield throws, but yeah.
Here's the other thing that does get me on this passing group. Where is Jay Sternberger? He had a couple plays last week. He made some appearances, and we had the Ermergerd Jay Sternberger, but we didn't get anything from him this week. And I didn't see him on any injury report. Right. So I don't
know. Did he have a catch last night? You just went through the whole list.
I went through the entire list. He didn't have a catch.
I saw him. He got thrown at last night because I did see a sighting. There was a Sternberg sighting.
He had a couple blocks that were okay, but I mean, I didn't see him particularly do anything in a game that was really built for the tight ends to be involved. And he didn't do anything.
And now they were depleted at wide receiver too. And I guess the backup tight end would be Lazard, but he's out. Do they make Dylan a tight end now that DeGura's out for the rest of the year as well?
I don't know. You can use him either way. We still have, I mean, DeGuara wasn't, he was in there some, but he was already injured. I think you just keep going with how you had it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, okay. Like tight ends aren't good till their second year, anyway. So.
Well, we'll go over some now since you kind of brought it up. DeGuara, you know, had an injury here. It looks like it's an ACL. He's pretty much going to be gone for the year.
Yeah, he's good, and he's a rookie too, and he's a tight end. So
yeah, so that's a rough start to his career. We already went over Kirksey and Lazard, but the other ones are, of course, Kenny Clark and Devontae Adams. Those two come into this game. Both of them said that they would have been ready to go. Both of them felt like they were going to get the chance to play and were told they were not. Because, again, the Packers' medical staff is among the most conservative in terms of putting players back on the field. Truth. They almost always keep players out rather than putting them out there to hurt themselves because they want to have them healthy for what comes after football. And just a reminder again that Martellus Bennett is a liar. An absolute liar and a terrible person. But he can play
terrible
football.
Person.
He
first really first play and football. Foremost, terrible person. Second of all, liar. Yes.
He could really play football, though. He was a very good tight end. And I loved the signing when it happened. But yeah,
right.
He's a liar. Everything he said on his way out the door was a lie, including his injury, which was a lie.
It does say something about the Packers, the environment in the Packers, in the house of the Packers at that time, though. And why all the changes did come right after that, too. Like, I mean, he might be a lying words that we can't use on this podcast because you've made it family friendly. But he is, I mean, it does say something about how the environment within the house of the Packers was at the time. And we alluded to it earlier with the records and how well LeFleur has done since he's gotten here. Obviously there needed to be a house cleaning, and so it's true. But yes, the Packers medical staff, very conservative. And I would say so too, because when you're 3-0 and the worst thing that can happen is go 3-1 into the bye. I mean, come on. That's a 12-4 season. If 3-1 turns into a 12-4 season, if you expand it out, so you drop a game to Atlanta, you don't want to do it, but you know what? Here's two of your most important players on your field, arguably the second, third most important offensive player, definitely the most important defensive player at this point. We have found out.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you sit them for one more week to go into the bye and let them hang out and get better over one regular season loss in a season that probably won't end?
And it didn't turn into a loss, so we got very fortunate there in that you feel very comfortable with what we have on this thing. Mm-hmm. Now, we feel very good about this offense. This offense is the highest scoring offense in the league.
Hoo-ah.
Now, hoo-ah indeed. Essay on it. Catch me off guard with a random hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. Nanny, nanny, boo-boo.
Yes, indeed. But anyhow, the defense, again, is not. I'll start with this, though. They gave up 16 points to what was, I believe, the second highest scoring team in the NFC, right? Second or third.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
This team can put up points. To a certain extent, it looked like, and we talked about this last week. I said this, and I'm going to pick this because I'm going to give you tons of credit in a moment here. But but I'm going to take credit for this. I specifically said this. Atlanta did not have the run game to take advantage of the biggest weakness of the Packers, which is we cannot stop the run at this point in our life. Kirksey out and Kenny Clark out. And they've got a 103-year-old man playing running back, and then Ito Smith spelling him. You know, Todd Gurley was great and was the most used back in football for several years, and he has nothing for the most part left.
Steven Jackson, he is Sean Alexander, he is, yes, Christian Okoye, yes.
You got that right. Last week you called him Steve Alexander, which is
great. Yes, Steve Alexander.
But yeah.
Works at a pub down the street from me here. Yeah, Steve Alexander. Cool. Yeah, just tell me you know Aaron and he'll...
Kid couldn't run.
Yeah.
Back when he was younger. But yeah, man. I mean, he doesn't have much left. It was Ito Smith and I'm forgetting the other guy, Brian... I'm forgetting the other running back they had back there.
Oh my God. Oddly enough, Steven Jackson ended up in Atlanta too after he left the Rams.
Yes.
Weird. Okay. That's a bad business plan, by the way, Atlanta. You might want to scrap that one.
Well, for a while, they had two very young, very good running backs. And now one of them, Tevin Coleman, is he playing for San Francisco or is he hurt again?
I mean, he's hurt again.
And then the other one, Devontae Freeman just signed with the Giants because of Saquon Barkley's injuries. But yeah,
because he wanted to lose.
Well, he wanted to play because you don't get paid a lot for not playing. But anyhow.
The Eagles are in charge of that division at 1-2-1, by the way.
Yeah.
The NFL. Continue on. Anyways, Atlanta. Run game.
They really tried, though. You could see it early on. Atlanta's first two drives were both 3-and-out, and they were 3-and-out because they did not want to throw. They wanted to run. They knew that was probably the best chance to attack this Packers defense, especially when early in the game when everybody was still healthy on the outside. Jair Alexander completely shut down Calvin Ridley. Five targets, zero catches, 0 yards, obviously. Five targets, though, for a guy who was, I forget how many, he had like 30 catches or something like that. He was doing very well. Lighting up the league at this point, and he had nothing. He had nothing in that game today. I keep saying today, but it was the other day.
You stole that one for me too. That was going to be my counter to you was how poorly when you're talking about how the defense was still and I was going to say, but Jair Alexander proved that he is legit, and he did shut down Ridley after games of 140, 110, and 130 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like Ridley's been just on fire. And then the other thing I want to bring up was the Packers defense. And this is when Wayne Larrivee should have said, here is your dagger, because it was midway through the second quarter and he could have said it. It was after that 20-play drive that the Atlanta Falcons had when they started at their own one and they went 20 plays, 93 yards, took them 10 minutes, and they got a field goal. Larrivee could have just landed the dagger right there. Like, you take that long and go that far down the field.
And they went for it on fourth twice, but not inside the 10.
So right, and like, and the Packers' defense still held. Like, it was,
held enough. We had, like I said, the pass coverage in that game was very, very good. I mean, even King got hurt partway through, and King had that one tackle that I'm just so mad because he always misses at least one tackle badly.
Yeah, he does.
And the one he missed was he could have tackled Julio Jones in the end zone, but missed him and he went for nearly a first down. Matt Ryan had only 285 yards passing this game, and that's 285 yards given the fact that he did almost everything in garbage time. If you look at the ESPN, the win predictor, it was 90%+ for the entire second half. The whole game was basically garbage time. It was.
It should have been 99% after that 20 play drive.
Yeah, it was something like that. If you go look at it is a ridiculous chart. We held Gurley had 16 rushes. He got 3.6 a carry. He had the two touchdowns, but it wasn't much of anything. Zacchaeus, very biblical last name there. Zacchaeus had 8 catches on 9 targets, 86 yards. He had the best thing they had for him. And then Hurst. Julio Jones has 4 catches on 4 targets.
What ended up happening with Julio Jones? What was his prognosis?
He came in not good. I can't remember what happened. I thought it was his hamstring again, possibly, because he was not doing particularly well coming in. He didn't play the second half, which that really is the end of it. If they don't have him, they have nothing to stretch that field, and they couldn't attack us where we could get hurt the most, which would be, having that ability to run the ball and stick it to us. That being said, the Packers' tackling did not improve this week particularly. Pettine expressed zero concern about it in the press conferences he had last week, but that team did not tackle well this week.
Their open field tackles, where you see them fall apart are not good. They do fairly well, like when, you know, like within the tackles, tackling, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, between the tackles,
it's usually the open field tackles. That's when they seem to fail miserably.
There's a lot of this thing where they're like, there he is, and then I'll jump at him, I'll make a big play, but it's like the worst thing. Like, don't leave your feet when you tackle. You know, drive through the tackle. They're leaving at their feet, trying to make a tackle further downfield. And we missed several sacks that way. There were four sacks in this game. I mean, three of them belonging to Zadarius, but that's good. The amount of pass pressure that we have been getting without having Kenny Clark up the middle has been problematic, to say the least. Still, I mean,
Zadarius Smith, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, and tally-ho this back into giving the Packers offensive line a ton of credit, and they're the unspoken heroes of the season so far. Aaron Rodgers is just allowed to sit there in his jungle gym and look downfield for 5 seconds. Like, Bakhtiari is on a second. He's on another level right now. He's so good. But the Packers, at least with the Packers pass rush, it's not super effective. You're right, because Kenny Clark up the middle is not taking 2-3 guys with him, but at least the other quarterbacks, for the most part, for the first 4 weeks, aren't sitting back there just allowed to have time to throw. Like, they have to make quick decisions. Like, the Smiths are at least collapsing the pocket. And yeah, sometimes they get out of the pocket and they're on the run and, you know, they're 10 yards away from anybody, but at least they're making it, like, they're in their backyard, like, making them move.
Yeah. And the one thing, I mean, they had 4 sacks in this game. They had 4 sacks, you look back at it, against the Lions. They weren't able to get many. They only had 2 sacks against the Saints. But some of that goes back to the points that we were making last week when we were talking about this, in that one of the problems is that this Packers defense is built to play with a lead. With the Saints, we constantly had to deal with the run. With the Lions, we could get ahead, you know, not right away, because we gave the Lions a lead to start off with. But once we get ahead of
14,
them,
boys.
Yeah, once we got ahead of them, we can change the way we play, because we want to play with a pass rush and not have to worry about the run. There were some concerning points, I guess, in terms of how the I haven't gone back to watch it again yet, but some of the things I noticed in there is the number of times the outside backers took the B gap instead of the C gap on their rush. Mm-hmm. Which means that they're playing to specifically, and the way they stepped, they obviously were trying to take away that B gap, meaning they're cutting inside the tackle.
Right.
And if you do that, that means, you know, or you have to know, if you have a real plan, which Pettine does have a plan, whether or not it always works or is the best plan is different, but he's a coach who's good enough to know somebody has that C gap. Somebody has assigned that gap behind him. Maybe it's Raven Green. Maybe it's specifically a linebacker from behind who has to then step out, or has a different read that tells him, I've got C gap on any run to this direction or something. But it did allow for some kind of outside runs. Atlanta was able to run outside a little bit more effectively than inside. And some of it was the amount of times we had gap shooting with our outside linebackers, it seemed. Not every time, but some of the time. They were also able to get a lot of players to the point of attack against our outside backers, like Zadarius, getting double teamed on the edge, really changed the ability of that defense to stop the run. So it
And it says something about Pettine too, because Matt Ryan is a pencil. He's a pencil on toothpicks. Like, he doesn't, you shove that pressure up the middle to get him out of the pocket, because he's most comfortable in the pocket. He's one of the last of the old pocket quarterbacks, you know, and definitely not Matty Ice anymore, because that nickname had to have gone after the Super Bowl, but especially now. And the one thing about Pettine is that he's like Zimmer, and this is, let's keep it in the NFC North, and I want to talk about Kevin Stefanski later too, but Pettine's like Zimmer. Like, despite who the personnel are, he's going to run his defense as if they can do what he wants them to do. regardless of whether or not it's Kenny Clark or whatever schlub we've got up the middle, or if it's Ty Summers at the middle, or if it's Blake Martinez, or if it's middle linebacker we just got from the Browns.
Kirksey, yeah, Christian Kirksey. Yeah, or if we end up having Ty Summers or just any of these other guys.
Exactly. But Pettine still runs his defense as if everybody can do the job that he is laying out for them. And the problem with Zimmer up in Minnesota being the head coach is that that's problematic when you're the head coach. When you're the defensive coordinator, I mean, the one thing about I like about Pettine versus Dom Capers for all those years is that Dom Capers continually tried to get cute. The guy's a legendary defensive coordinator, but it was like, there's things that obviously weren't working. And it was like, whatever. And Pettine in the meantime, just kind of just runs the same thing over and over again. And guys get beat individually because they get beat individually. It's not like, I don't know how better to describe it, but it's like Dom Capers' defenses would purge hundreds of yards and drives and games would fall apart and the defense couldn't keep up. Whereas with Pettine, especially with this offense that they're running right now, he keeps the game in check at least, you know, and even with the lack of tackling, the lack of inside presence on the linebacker level or the defensive line level, like it's still like the defense failed early against Detroit, but then kept him in it through the rest of the game and let the offense keep up. Defense kept him in it in the Vikings game. I mean, they only gave up 16 points to Atlanta. I mean, the defense isn't terrible. Like, and Pettine, I like him. Just let him. I like him being defensive coordinator. I like that it doesn't get extravagant or weird after all those years of like a one down lineman and 10 guys roaming around like zombies. One might blitz, one might not. Oh, 4th and 26 didn't work. All right. Even though that was before Dom Capers, but anyways, bad reference, Aaron Flottam. However, John, back to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we've learned is there's still things that need to be fixed on that defense. One of them is just going to be get Kenny Clark back. Right. The offense we'll keep rolling almost, it seems, without regard to who is going to be on the field at the time. The only other thing I'll say about this game, as we're talking about this game yet, is Aaron Rodgers had the one scary moment where it looked like he hyperextended his knee. In talking about it, he said that he was more embarrassed than injured. So.
So hopefully
that's a good thing. He's you know, he's got a week off here and it doesn't look like it was bad. He went back out and ran for a first down after that. So I don't think it looked so bad. I mean, I don't even play a doctor on TV. I don't have anything. I have a Juris doctorate, so.
No, and I was a 36-year-old man at one point in my life and outside playing with the kids and you cut too fast in the backyard. Then you're on the ground looking at the sky going, I know I'm not hurt, but it hurts.
Yeah.
Because those joints don't do those things anymore. You know, it's just, it happens.
So the biggest thing coming up.
Kind of the offensive line was great yesterday, though. Again, they were very good. Our offensive line is unbelievable. It's really, really good. There was one play, I don't even remember. I don't even remember what it was. It's early on in the game. And a blitzer came up the middle and got just depleted by Elgin Jenkins, like on the way through, like checked off his block and then just came around and he saw that blitzer coming up the middle and just caught that dude, perfectly legal hit, like just a forearm shimmy right to the chest. And that rusher went flying through the air. And it was unbelievable to watch. And like, I showed Holly, I rewound it like 3 times. I'm like, look, all of a sudden last second, like this guy thinks he's going to sack Aaron Rodgers because both the guard and the tag, they're all lined up. And then all of a sudden he just disengages long enough to whack that rusher coming through and then goes back to blocking. This offensive line is ridiculously good. Because you don't hear about them. You don't hear their names at any point during the game.
Yeah, Jenkins had one holding penalty, but I mean,
that happens.
Yeah, that's about it. They played a very good game.
If you're not holding, you're not trying. Let me tell you this.
For everybody who thinks that the Packers get every call, there were two blatant face masks where they just snapped the head of running backs around just ridiculously. and neither of them was called. Just, it was terrible. Just absolutely terrible what they were doing out there. Just, and tackling by the head, just blatantly tackling by the head a couple times. It was terrible to see. And,
Only Vikings fans think that the Packers get all the calls.
Oh, no. Saints fans think that, too. They think they're the only team that gets bad calls. I got in a fight with
But their team's the one that tried to murder Brett Favre in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
True. Looking ahead, well, we have a bye week, and we're going to talk more about Tampa as we get ready for that in a week here. But the other thing that we do want to talk about here is
Tampa Bay.
Tampa, yeah, whatever.
Tampa Brady.
The only real news that we have in terms of other football in Wisconsin, which is Badger football for the most part, because there is no WIAC this year. They're just not playing. But the Badgers had particularly bad news, depending on who you are. If you're one of those, you know, super Mertz fans, then you didn't care or you were excited, which is terrible. That makes you a ghoul. Because Jack Cohn got injured this week, and to be clear, he was very good last year.
Yeah, he was.
He's on the short list already for the Peyton Manning Award. He's on the watch list.
He completed 70% of his passes last year, right?
And he moves very well. He is a mobile quarterback. If you haven't heard it, you haven't watched a single game of Badger football, but he was offered scholarships to D1 lacrosse teams. He is also that guy. He is tough. And he runs well. And
I thought lacrosse was the D3 team, John.
Gosh. He was not offered by lacrosse. He was offered to play the sport of lacrosse. Sorry. Yeah. Well done. Well done. Good fun.
Thank you.
I appreciate you, Aaron.
What is lacrosse's mascot anyways?
Eagles. Go Eagles.
Eagles. That's right. Thank you. I knew they're maroon and white. I know that. So.
No, that's.
What's that?
So their maroon colors and silver. Yeah.
Maroon and silver.
Maroon and gray, I guess.
Gray, whatever. Yeah. Off color.
Yeah.
Maroon and beige.
Go Eagles. I could sing the fight song, but I won't.
Please don't. I'd rather have you sing Ave Maria.
We had to sing some of the alma mater and the maroon and gray songs for different football games because I was in the concert choir. We would do that every now and then. But anyhow, you know, the Mertz era is effectively beginning now. It may not be the whole season. We'll see how he plays. We'll see what happens. Mertz had surgery. It was an injury to his foot. We don't know how that's going to keep him out or how long or what the plan is there. But Mertz is taking all the snaps with the ones at this point.
So what's a bit, too, is that so Cohen was an junior, right?
I think he's a senior this year. So this would have been
proper senior. And Mertz burnt up his redshirt last year, right?
Correct.
Okay, so we're not losing a redshirt year with Mertz. Yeah, because Mertz was on the team last year. I'm sorry. College football, I'm completely confused right now. So
Mertz is a guy people really wanted. He's one of the best, highest recruited quarterbacks in the league coming into the season.
Out of Kansas, right?
Out of Kansas. Four-star quarterback. He was the starting quarterback in the Army All-American game, in which he set the record for most passing yards in the All-American game.
Right, and I don't understand why Badgers fans want him on the field so fast if Cohen can play, because now this is just 1 year closer to him being drafted out of here. So, you know, why wouldn't you want one good year out of Cohen and then two good years out of Mertz, or at least one good year out of Mertz? I don't know, whatever. Yeah, I know. He lit it up, but and why wouldn't you want back to back good quarterbacks? And for those who are like, yeah, Cohen's all great. Now we get to see Mertz. Why wouldn't you want Cohen to go out there and have a Lombardi season?
Peyton Manning Award season. Yeah.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want him to win the Peyton Manning Award? Potentially be in the talk for Heisman. I don't know. Whatever. You know.
No,
like actually.
No.
No, but I'm just saying, just like pump up like the quarterback position at Wisconsin. And then when he graduates, you know, and then now Mertz comes in, now you get a couple good years out of him, like pump up the position. So more quarterbacks want to come play at Wisconsin. Like that's the backwards thinking that I don't understand sometimes about some of these fans of college sports is that like, you want the next guy to stand up. Why wouldn't you want the guy in there to do super great and then the next guy to do super great? Kind of like Oklahoma with their string of quarterbacks with Jalen Hurts and the kid in Arizona and the kid in Cleveland.
Oh, Tua and yeah.
No, I was talking about Jalen Hurts and Murray and Mayfield. Sorry.
Oh yeah, Baker Mayfield. Yeah.
I was being cute. Come on. The kid in Arizona and the kid in Cleveland that has those commercials where he vacuums the stadium. Yes.
I like the one with take it from the Hulu commercials. Take it from me. Baker Mayfield's head and not Baker Mayfield's body.
Baker Mayfield's commercials are not bad. No. I'm sorry. Like
if he was that good at football, it'd be
very
great.
Entertaining. Yes.
If he were that good at football, it'd be amazing. But he's way better at being in those commercials.
How about Jake Allen up in Buffalo, by the way? Sorry. Or Josh. We need to do this at the end. Yeah. Sure. Play defensive. I mean, after a career playing defensive end for the Chiefs, Vikings, and Bears, now he's playing quarterback up in Buffalo. This is amazing. This guy's awesome.
Something, all right.
Went back to Wyoming and got his degree and everything.
Fabulous. We are going to talk just briefly, Brewers. And what we want to do, though, is we want to go into saying that we will go next week, since there is no Packer game. Next week, we will do our annual Requiem to a Brewers season. We didn't want to shortchange it. We have the opportunity to have a very full look back type thing, but we are going to talk about the two playoff games they had. They lost 4-2 and then 3-0. I mean, just what kills you again is just not hitting. In the first game, there were 5 hits. 3 of them were Garcia. Abisail Garcia went 3-for, I think he went 3-for-4. Yeah, he went 3-for-4. The only other hits, forgetting the one, is it Urias and Arcia? I know Arcia had the one because he had the 2-run home run, which were the only runs we scored in the playoffs. So, rough start for Suter.
Arcia is a playoff. He's got
a couple home runs against the Dodgers. I mean,
he's got a good playoff record. Like that dude, say what you will about his regular season stuff. Arcia, when he gets to the playoffs, that guy shows up, man. Like he's a different player. And if to all those that want Arcia to be gone, shut up. Yeah. Arcia's good.
Yeah, no, he was, like we said, he had batted 260 this year. He has random power, not a lot of power, but random power. He's a very good fielder. And Abisail Garcia did well. And yeah, 5 hits in that game. The problem is Brett Suter walks in 2 in the first. I will say this.
That was
good job by Brewers fans by being very gracious about the whole thing. And stepping in on Twitter to tell Suter, look, we know that was a rough game for you. Hang in there. It'll get better. He's been spending the entire season essentially as a long inning bullpen reliever for the most part.
Right.
And because of, losing Burns and having Woodruff coming on short rest, we had to kind of throw him out there in a situation that he didn't want to have to be in and didn't put him in the best situation for him to succeed. And it got rough. And it was a 3-2 game, but we couldn't get anything else other than the one home run.
It was rough, and you know what? The thing is that the Brewers pitching staff didn't give up that many runs. They scored nothing. They scored, except for one home run, nothing. And we also learned that Clayton Kershaw is the best left-hander maybe ever. Warren Spahn is up there. You can put him into that category. Like, he literally just took apart the Brewers in that second game. It wasn't even close. Like there was no point during the game.
Where there were only 4 hits by the Brewers in that game. It was Hura, Urias, Jerko, and Garcia. Have been hitting both games. Yeah, it was a rough one. Just never close. I mean,
you could tell. I was up at Fort McCoy. I was listening to the game because I couldn't watch it. You could just hear it in Euchre's voice. Like, you can tell, like, when Euchre knows they're not in the game. Now, during the regular season, like, if they're losing a game to the Cleveland Indians in the 7th inning, like, you can tell he's just, like, he starts telling stories. But you could just tell Euchre was like, well, this isn't going to end well for the Brewers. And actually, after that Suter start, it was like, the one thing that I was really disappointed about it was that I think – Council waited too long on Suter. Like, everyone could kind of tell, like, well, this isn't going to end well. And I think Council just waited a little too long on Suter. Like, it could have been, but I mean, what would have been the best case scenario? The Brewers shut out the Dodgers for a win because we're not going to score any runs anyway. So it's
get a 0-0 tie and then just something fluke happen. The only thing that makes it better is that the Brewers did score more runs than the Cubs. The Cubs got swept in two by the Marlins. Fun fact, Aaron, I was listening to Waddle and Sylvie because, you know, if you want to get your schadenfreude this week, you had to listen to Bears Talk Radio. But they're less fun about it because
I listen to Paul Allen. It's cool. Yeah,
I listen to both of them generally. But Bears Talk with Waddle and Sylvie and Yurko and them is they're far more reasonable and rational. So it takes some of the fun out of it because they're not insane. But still, they were talking about this. And here's a fact I learned today. The Marlins have never lost a playoff series.
They've never.
Nope. Never in their history.
100%.
They have won every playoff series they've ever been in. They've been to the playoffs now three times.
Three times.
The other two times they won the World Series. So look out for the Marlins, everybody, and Jesus Aguilar and
One really peeves me off about Jesus. Like, we don't have a good first baseman. We went through Smoke and all the other ones, and I don't know why we got rid of him. It was like, well, we have to get rid of him. And it's like I still don't understand getting rid of Jesus Aguilar. I really don't.
I don't know.
But yeah, he was slumping. And for a team that rides out most slumps with players, like the fact that they just let him go so quickly and then let Thames go at the end of the year too, and then just had no backup
player. Thames was no good this year though, so don't worry about that.
But well, yeah, I mean, I know that. I mean that too, but I mean that's who you had for first baseman. And while they were here, they were good. And you knew that Jesus was he's a good average to good fielding first baseman. Yeah. And although he doesn't have a whole lot of power, he's got like RCA random power. He's a good hitter though. Like he's good with the bat. He's got good balance in the batter's box. And I still don't know why we let him go. Like that out of all the players that the Brewers have let go over the years, at least in the last couple of years, that one really makes me mad. Like I don't understand why they let him go.
And Brinson. They've got Brinson, so
who's that guy? Brinson,
one of the guys we traded away for stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. They've got a lot of former Brewer type people on there, former Brewer farmhands too.
Who did we get for Jesus?
Oh, I don't know who we got at the end there. That was some late trade last year just for some push. I can't remember what we got on that one.
Like some middle reliever that's something. Down in AAA.
But yeah, the Marlins won 5-1 and then 2-0. So the Cubs only scored one run. Brewers doubled them up. Brewers were way better.
Still mad about Jesus.
Yeah. It would have been nice.
I'm a little bit more spiky on these podcasts after I have a drill weekend, I've noticed. So
that's good. All right, we're going to wrap up here. We do have a couple little things that I want to throw into a segment that we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, Aaron, just a couple little things that I'll mention. One of them is that we have for high school sports in Wisconsin, there will be no championships or any events that will be allowed to be held on UW facilities. So if you get to the state final for football, you will not be at Camp Randall. You will not be playing. They will not be running in any place that's on the campus. Yeah. I mean, they don't do that anyhow for cross country. That's not held there. But I mean, like, if things don't pick up and improve, I think they'll most likely be able to get basketball down to like the Kohl Center or, you know, things like that, because that's a little different in that regard, because they're going to have those college sports. And I don't know, it really depends on a lot of factors that none of us understand or know how they're going to go from this point. You know, like we imagine there will be a vaccine, but none of us know this yet. And if there is, then that's a game changer. Maybe we do these things, but we're going to see how they do this. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But for now, no fall championships for sure will be held at any UW facilities at this season for any high school sports in Wisconsin.
Hey, Johnny, Noah, yeah. I promise I'll keep this from ranting, but that is flippant high hope. And I was listening to people talk about Minnesota sports. They're only going through sectionals. And the bigger problem with having state championships at like the Kohl Center and stuff like that is money. You know, if you play college basketball games, you'll get TV revenue that will pay for the Kohl Center to be open.
Yeah.
I mean, just the state finals things, they make so much money off revenue, off door ticket sales and concessions and stuff like that. Just to keep the Kohl Center open with lights on for a day, you can't, I mean, it's not worth it to just do it for free, just to let them do that. So, but yeah, so I mean, and that's where that's at. So it's not,
that's not a false.
I don't think it's not so much a COVID thing as it is just, it's strictly a money thing. Like you can't afford to do this, especially since most of these sports didn't have a finals last year either that produced revenue either. So,
well, and this is only for fall sports so far. I mean, the Kohl Center would be for winter sports, obviously. But,
well, you're talking about basketball, and I was just like,
I'm looking ahead.
They were talking about it, I was hearing them talk about Minnesota sports the same way with hockey and stuff like that too. And it was like, they're Minnesota's only playing to sectional level
because there is no TV revenue for high school sports. It's only who comes in the door. You could play college sports and say nobody comes in the door, and that would be, you could do it yet. But yeah, no, there's no. I mean, I guess men's hockey relies a lot more on ticket revenue than TV revenue, even though I watched most of Badger games on TV rather than being there, because they are on TV FS Wisconsin.
And the most expensive time to keep facilities open is in the wintertime to keep them warm.
That's warm and yet also cool the ice. So
It's just, so it's a hard thing. So
the other thing that we'll say, keeping it with the Kohl Center idea, is that Ryan McDonough was a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning who just won the Stanley Cup. Congratulations to warm weather teams ruining hockey for everybody. But he is now the 14th Badger to have his name written onto the Stanley Cup. 14 is the NCAA record. It is the most players by any single NCAA school to have their names on the Stanley Cup. So another great day for Wisconsin hockey, I guess. Most of the great days are happening by people who have already left and are in the pros. We'll see how they do.
That's insane to me that Wisconsin's got the most. I figured Michigan would, because just by their amount of championships.
Or somebody like Maine or BC, but no.
No, but Michigan, I mean, you got to remember back in the day, Michigan used, and I think Michigan still has the most college hockey, D1 hockey championships. I believe they have 24.
Ooh. Well, let's take a look here. Anything else you want to add while I quick look that up?
Will just continue vamping, and I think that they're number one, and I think number two is probably Minnesota's number three. I know there's somebody
They're not. Here it is. Actually, team titles. Michigan has 9. So you were close. Denver has 8, including the last one was in 2017. Michigan's last was 1998. North Dakota has 8. Wisconsin has 6. Minnesota has 5.
So Wisconsin's 4.
Minnesota's tied for 5th. Their last one being in 2003.
Michigan, I think, has 24 flat upsets.
You were so close. It was, there.
I was only off by 66%.
I forgot to give credit where credit was due, like I wanted to say earlier.
Oh, thank you.
Let's end this show by pointing out that Aaron Flottam last week, his prediction on the Packer game was 39-19. That's not so bad. You were pretty close there with that. 39-19. Mine was 42-27. I was further away.
Honestly, I think that game was shaping up and in a very So my final points were a very McCarthy. I referred to Mike McCarthy's offense and game plan as McCarthyism. I thought that was a great joke, and you didn't laugh nearly as hard as you should have. Not because if anyone understands what McCarthyism is,
too soon.
You would.
Especially in Wisconsin.
Most people don't understand what McCarthyism is because they're dead now. And so
it's the
people
Appleton.
Who knew what McCarthyism was. And, but back to that. So no, I think the Packers really pulled the pedal off the gas. Plus that 20 play drive that the Atlanta had sucked up so much time of the game. That sucked up like a whole quarter, like that Aaron Rodgers wasn't scoring points and Shepard rolling over and getting one more touchdown. I mean, last week they didn't score 40, but God, this Packers team feels like they're going to score 40 every week. So like, thank you. I was close. I appreciate you saying that, but I really think that that game got a little stale at the end. Otherwise, I think it would have been in the 40s. The only other thing I want to do for last call was, so Stefanski, Kevin Stefanski, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. As we all know, I listen to a lot of KFan up in the Twin Cities. And so the only thing that's really been propelling that Vikings team to do anything for the last couple of years is their offensive coordinator, was their offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski. And the one thing that he could do is he could get the most out of an offense that had various problems with it. And so the one thing with Cleveland this year, they had kind of, so if you remember watching Cleveland last year, there was a couple just terrible games. Like, and so the one thing that he did this week, and I think it was really showcased, was he finally figured out how to do it. And that was that Cleveland's got an amazing defense, really good running game, and a mediocre quarterback that just happened to be drafted in the first round. And he took the ball out of Baker Mayfield's hands and ran it. And they smoked the Cowboys. And absolutely, it was not even close. And no. Kevin Stefanski is an amazing offensive mind. He really is. Like, he got the most out of a Vikings team in another quarter. And as soon as he leaves, Kirk Cousins looks like he does.
Regress to the mean.
And so it was just really cool. Really cool to see yet more talent leaving the NFC North. So the Packers can just run rampant, because the thing is that everybody in Minnesota is mad now that they can't suck for Lawrence anymore. So, because they won this week.
And the Bears were very unhappy, and they think their offense is so bad that they're going to be terrible. And they were talking about firing the offensive coordinator and telling Nagy never to call a play again. It's fantastic.
Well, you should never let Nagy call plays anyway. So,
yeah. All right, everybody, thank you again for joining us for another wonderful week of Wisconsin sports talk here on the Scani Johnny podcast. Aaron and I both thank you. Remember, please, to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. You can follow the show at Scani Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scani Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScaniJohnny1 or online at ScaniJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.